B-Pod Studios.
Ready, set, go!
This is Checkpoint XP Daily, your daily dose of esports and video game discussion. A complete look at all things esports and gaming. A production of Beasley Esports XP. Here are your hosts, Nate Bender, Robbie Landis, Norris Howard, and Joe Sloan.
Checkpoint reached.
Hey, welcome to Checkpoint XP Daily for Tuesday, May 28th, 2019. Your home for esports and gaming. Want to thank everyone listening on the Talk of Las Vegas, 101.5 FM and 720 AM, as well as KJR 950 in Seattle, Washington. Coming up today on Checkpoint XP Daily, we'll get the latest in esports news from over at the news desk with Sarah Skopic. Plus, we'll get caught up on the major esports leagues. Those discussions are ahead here today on Checkpoint XP Daily. But first, let's check in with Sarah Skopic over at the Checkpoint News Desk and get a gaming news update.
Gaming News Update with Sarah Skopic.
Ladies and gentlemen, we interrupt this program to bring you important news.
CheckpointXP.com.
At Star Wars Celebration this year, Kathleen Kennedy hinted that they were working on something set in the Old Republic era of Star Wars. We now have confirmation that a movie for the Old Republic is indeed underway, and the script is being penned by the creator of Altered Carbon.
Whoa. That's huge.
I think this guy also worked on Battle Angel Alita.
Oh, nice.
Which, I mean, I liked the writing in both of those.
Yeah, give that dude more work.
I am all for this.
Do you guys think this could potentially be the next trilogy? Because that's
I hope it's
that's
more
the
than
rumor,
one film.
Right? Is that, yeah, yeah. That they're going to, like, start from somewhere fresh.
Right.
No, I really do hope it's a new trilogy and really sort of a new direction, because I think they've gotten as much as they're going to get out of the sort of Skywalker
And they need
stories.
To just completely remove
just
themselves.
Just hit the reset button. Yep.
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, it's an era of Star Wars that people have a little bit of context for, and I think that they would welcome, you know, a trilogy set in that time.
Right.
I love the idea of this.
Yeah, I think it's a good era, and they don't need to do, like, the Revan storyline. Obviously, that's been covered with Knights of the Old Republic and even in the Old Republic, the MMO. Just use that era. It's an awesome time period.
Absolutely.
Elder Scrolls fans will have something new to play this year, but not a video game. Modiphius Entertainment is creating a tabletop Elder Scrolls game that is set to release around the holidays this year. The game will use 32mm base resin figures and will use some similar mechanics to their Fallout Wasteland board game.
Now, wasn't this the guys that got caught up with somebody copied?
This was a different thing. That was a D&D scenario that was based around the Elder Scrolls Online expansion
for Elsewhere.
This is different because
this is like a board game.
Yeah, this is like it's based off of their Fallout board game, which is actually a very good board game.
Fallout Wasteland was so fun. If this is anything like that, I am in.
According to multiple websites across Asia, The Witcher 3 Wild Hunt looks like it'll be coming to the Switch.
Oh, man!
While the console has managed games like Doom, analysts were skeptical if it'd have the power to run a game like The Witcher 3. While we still don't have a hard confirmation, multiple websites listing the title for Switch means it's pretty likely.
I am so excited that this is even a possibility.
If they do this, there's nothing they can do.
I mean, this point, not from this gen, that's
well,
for sure.
Yeah, because, like, if your system has the ability to run a game like that, it means that there's pretty much no game current generation that you can't run.
From a technical standpoint.
Yeah. When?
Yeah, Monster Hunter World. I think in Monster Hunter World, like a lot of games like that, there are like questions about how will it control, being able to adapt the controls for the Switch.
If you could play back on the PSP using like the claw configuration, you can put it on the Switch.
I will say this, man. I'm not looking forward to my Switch feeling like a cast iron skillet in my hand, man.
That's true. I mean, it's going to eat battery life, and the more you eat battery life, the less charge those batteries are able to hold. And my other concern, like, and it's not a concern, I just wanted Bethesda to put any Fallout game on the Switch. It's just, we know that it's possible. If it can run Skyrim, it can run any of those. It can run any of the Fallout
4
games.
Would be awesome.
Wouldn't
on the
it
Switch.
Though? Oh my god, I would die.
Fans won't have to wait as long as they thought for details on Pokemon Sword and Shield. Nintendo has announced a Pokemon Direct coming the week before E3. The show will give details on the upcoming Pokemon Sword and Shield and will be held on June 5th.
That's very exciting. Now, I actually have no idea what they're going to do at E3.
Yeah, see, that's the question that it opens up. Okay, if you're kind of spending that round on a show the week before E3, what are you doing at your E3 Direct?
Well, first of all, you're going to have hands-on
with Sword and Shield. You're probably going to announce some new DLC for Ultimate.
Your next Smash character.
Ooh,
what's a game that they could... They have to have a game up
there. They always
sleeve,
have a
right?
surprise game.
There's got to be.
They have the past few years.
But, like, last couple of years, they do, like, they've got their showcase, and then they follow it up with, like, a more in-depth treehouse. And I thought Pokemon would be right for that because, I mean, with a new generation of Pokemon, we're getting new Pokemon.
I'm calling it now Animal Crossing for the Switch at E3.
Oh, that's a possibility.
That's a pretty good guess right there.
Nintendo has announced that the MMO DC Universe Online will be coming to the Switch this summer. The free-to-play MMO will have private service for the Switch and will not be cross-platform to PS4, Xbox, and PC.
DC Universe Online is still running?
There's my question. This game is... I played DC Universe Online when it was still relatively new.
Right.
How old of an MMO are we talking about here?
Seven or eight years. Right?
Yeah, it's been around for a while.
It's been around for a minute, yeah. So I played it when it was relatively new. It was the height of okay.
Oh, no.
It was all right.
I love the idea of MMOs on the Switch. It's just, I wonder from a technical standpoint if it's the most sound idea.
It was released in 2011.
That was a while ago.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm excited for the idea of like a console like the Switch having an MMO on it. I just don't know about.
See, this is
that
sort
one.
Of the reverse problem from The Witcher 3. It's like we know that it can run, just should it?
Should.
You couldn't have done something better than that. Yeah.
Ever since Stadia was announced, Google has kept relatively quiet about giving further details. They've merely promised that we'll get more details this summer. While we still don't know exactly when, Google has now confirmed that they'll be revealing Stadia's pricing, launch library, and launch information at that time.
Wow. Okay.
So, all right. Well, we can maybe extrapolate a little bit from that. If we're getting the pricing, the launch information, and some of the launch library this summer... I mean, we're talking holiday release.
Holiday release.
If they're confident enough to start giving us the price points, we're talking holidays, right?
Yeah, I that would make the most sense to me.
Usually if it's still a year out, you don't get your pricing points at that point.
That's true. I mean, you don't usually make long-term tech announcements that people sit around and wait for a long time. It's usually a very tight window of, like, it's going to be available in 3 months, and then over that 3 months, people get very, very excited.
Right. This could be a late fall. This could be that kind of, like, October, November.
That's what I say, November.
Spot. Yeah.
November.
That could be.
That would make sense.
Senator Josh Hawley has officially introduced his loot box legislation into Congress, and he has two Democratic co-sponsors already on board. The good news, depending on which side of the argument you're on, is that analysts are very skeptical the bill will pass. They say that in 2019, Congress is barely functional, and a bill as non-essential as this one is unlikely to see any traction.
You know what? So for all the things we said where this might pass, we failed to account for the fact that this Congress is doing nothing.
That's actually very true. I don't know. I mean, if people are really wringing their hands about this, I wouldn't be too worried that this particular legislation will pass.
But that doesn't mean it can't be rewritten and brought back up again.
But this does prove that there is a political will to move the needle on this issue, and I don't think that this is the last we'll end up hearing.
And not just a political needle, a bipartisan political.
That's very true, and that's very difficult in this climate, too.
Right. Two Democratic co-sponsors on a Republican bill is not a common thing to see.
I'm guessing one of them was Maggie Hassan, maybe?
No, it was Markey. And I can't remember the other one. But
that's kind of surprising.
Massachusetts and Ohio,
I think. No kidding.
Yeah.
And that's all for the Checkpoint XP Gaming News Update. For more, head over to our website, checkpointxp.com.
Thanks, Sarah, for the update. Late last week, we were introduced to one of the strangest new handheld systems we've seen in a long time.
Oh, man.
It's called the Playdate. Ugh, that name. And is an indie handheld console.
Yeah, it looks kind of like a yellow Game Boy Micro if the D-pad and the buttons had been underneath instead of on the sides.
And
It's got a black and white screen.
Oh boy.
They say it's, quote, a high-end black and white screen. Whatever that means. And it also has a hand crank on the side.
A crank!
Now the crank is not to power it like I initially assumed. I saw the hand crank, I'm like, That's actually kind of cool. A handheld that you just crank every now and then.
No, it's not.
It's stupid, but like, I can see it. No, it's part of the controller is the crank. Some of the games will utilize this
thing.
Yeah,
that's horrible.
That's so dumb.
That's horrific.
That's really stupid.
That was unacceptable in 1991.
Wait. So, question, and I'm just connecting some dots here.
Go for it.
It has a black and white screen, then it's saying it's going to have games from people who make, like, Katamari, who make, colorful, absurdist games.
Some of the developers are people who worked on Quap, Katamari Damacy, Firewatch.
They're going to be making WarioWare-size games, right? Like, you know how WarioWare is, like, 150 small games packed into one game?
Yeah.
And it's, like, stupid and all over the place? Like, that's what they're making.
Well, and the way they talk about it, it has a variety of, like, length of games. Some of them are very small, quick games. Some of them, they say, are full-length titles.
Get out of here.
Such as?
Go away.
Don't look at me, dude.
With a black and white screen? Come on.
Now, you don't actually buy games for it. You get a season of games with it. One of them comes out each week for 12 weeks.
Nope.
Presumably, if it's popular, you would get another season of games after that.
I'm assuming that Urban Outfitters has been the one to sign up to sell this piece of crap.
So what are we talking, like $50 for this?
It's expected to ship in early 2020 for $149.
Are you kidding me?
Unacceptable!
$150?
Yeah.
And you don't get a backlit screen?
No, there's no backlight on the screen either.
Oh my God.
I've never seen anything like this.
Is Soulja Boy behind this?
Right? As far as I can tell, no.
It seems like the most hipster thing that I can think of, but even hipsters would look at it and be like, but that's impractical.
Even they would be like, the crank's a bit much.
And then they'd get on their unicycle and unicycle away.
Ugh.
All right, listen, we want to hear from you. What do you think of the Playdate? Is this the most lunatic console you've ever seen in your life? Connect with us on social media. That's Checkpoint XP on Facebook and Twitter, and Checkpoint_XP on Instagram. Still ahead on Checkpoint XP Daily, we'll recap the action in the major esports leagues. Plus, we'll preview the upcoming summer split of the LCS. That'll wrap up today's Checkpoint XP Daily. But ahead next, we'll check in with Sarah over at the Checkpoint News Desk.
If you haven't felt pressured to subscribe to our Twitch channel, just you wait.
Esports news is next here on Checkpoint XP Daily.
This is Checkpoint XP, esports and gaming radio.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
This is Checkpoint XP, esports and gaming radio. CheckpointXP.com.
Welcome back to Checkpoint XP Daily, your home for esports and gaming. I want to thank everyone listening on 98.5, the Sports Hub of Boston, as well as the Team 980 in Washington, D.C. Still ahead on Checkpoint XP Daily, we'll recap the action in the major esports leagues, and we'll preview the summer split for the LCS. That's ahead in about 15 minutes here on Checkpoint XP Daily. But first, let's check in with Sarah Skopic over at the Checkpoint News Desk and get an esports gaming update.
Esports gaming update with Sarah Skopic.
Twitch appears to be in the testing phases of a new subscriber-only stream feature. The idea is you could set your stream up so that non-subscribers could watch for a period of time and then would be required to subscribe to continue watching.
Ooh.
This would, in essence, create Twitch's first pay-per-view offering.
I'm actually surprised that this isn't a thing
yet.
Yeah,
you know, because we've had subscriber-only chat and subscriber-only bonuses for a long time.
Yeah.
I am kind of surprised we've never seen this thing, but I guess Twitch was kind of founded on, like, the opposite idea that this is something for everybody.
See, this is a really creative paywall, though. Like,
exactly. That's my concern, is that, you know, you could have big events such as a Combo Breaker, which took place over the weekend.
Sure.
That's a way for them to have another revenue stream. So for them to not do it, it kind of almost doesn't make monetary sense. So it could create a massive paywall for a lot of programming.
What does this look like for bigger streamers, though? Imagine if Ninja decided that he's now a sub-only stream.
Well, or I think the way you would do it is, you know, a few days a week, you would be everyone, but then you'd have a bonus stream once a week or twice
a
week.
That's
a
smart way.
Now, listen, I've been hearing a lot of butthurt from non-streamers or people who like to watch streams about this, which is, I guess, fair when you hear about it, but you got to understand that this is an additional tool in the tool belt of streamers to be able to utilize to try to market themselves and to try to monetize themselves. Will there be some people who go sub only or, you know, GTFO? Like, maybe
that might happen,
but they're going to see a hit in their
the market
audience.
Will bear out that response.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I do think that you're right, Joe. I think that this is going to be utilized as a tool, and I expect to see it utilized a whole lot more commonly across the platform.
The scary thing that you could see with something like this is, you know, and I'm just using this as an example, but if Twitch said, hey, we just spent $90 million on the rights to Overwatch, what if the playoffs are sub-only?
Yeah, and that's what theory. I'm saying. As I think it'll be more used for events as opposed to individual streams.
I think it'll be more accepted that way, because it's just pay-per-view events.
Because, I mean, just think about it. Bam, DreamHack, you got to pay to watch it.
I think the bonuses, like added points of view, or, you know, if you've got something like BlizzCon, additional stages and presentations.
Stuff like that.
Like, yeah, that's what I see this kind of bearing out as. Like I said, a few people might use it as, like, this is pay-per-view and that's how we're doing it, but again, they're going to see such a massive reduction on their audience that the market will bear it out.
Overwatch is getting set to release a long-requested feature in the form of replays.
Oh my god, thank you.
Players will now be able to go back into a game they've just completed and review the action from all angles. Replays will be accessible from the player profile page and will allow viewers to remove the HUD, view from different angles, and speed up or slow down the action.
It seems like this is taking a really long time.
It has, and this is something that, you know, League has had since, like, time
immemorial.
Well,
I was saying, like, well, no, League did not have this for a long time. You had to download a separate client that would do this for you.
And to be fair, even with League, you're still looking at it from the same perspective the entire time. The fact that the replay feature essentially has
you can change the angle in the replays if you want. You can watch from all angles.
Yeah.
You can get right down on the field with them if you want.
Yeah.
Oh, that's pretty crazy then.
Yeah, it's pretty wild.
Whether you're interested in playing or not, the viewership on World of Warcraft Classic cannot be denied. Ever since the beta launch, WoW Classic has been right around the top of Twitch viewership. For the second week in a row, endemic WoW streamers like Soda Poppin are taking the top spots off mainstays like Ninja.
You know what? I was really frustrated about WoW Classic for a while, and then I went and played the Nosomi server, and then I looked at myself and I said, Norris, you're a hypocrite.
I'm actually still skeptical about it, because even the tweets that I see, like, aren't people having fun, but I don't think they realize they're not having fun. Like, I saw someone was like, you know, I just played for 2 hours and I'm only level 4. But they're still playing.
I mean, their collector's editions already sold out. It's selling like gangbusters in pre-orders.
I don't understand
but
why.
But I reject that whole sort of ideal where your fun is directly, you know, proportional to how many levels you gain. And old MMOs aren't built off
that. I get that. Having played FF11. I get that. Okay.
I think that the fact that it's been at the top of the Twitch charts can't be understated.
Not at all.
No, it can't. You're
like,
right.
The fact that people want to watch people play it.
Play vanilla WoW. You want to see that?
Blows my mind.
Yeah.
Earlier this month, we saw Astralis fail to capture gold at the Blast Pro Series Madrid, and now Team Liquid failed to take home first at CS Summit 4. Despite winning at IEM Sydney in early May, they struggled against Team Vitality in the finals of Summit 4. Team Vitality took home $52,500 for the win, and now all teams will be turning their attention towards DreamHack Masters Dallas this week.
DreamHack Masters Dallas is going to give us an interesting look at the current state of CSGO. We've seen the titans of, you know, CSGO falter a little bit, and now we'll see if they're just going to quickly right the ship, or if they're going to, you know, this might be a balancing.
Bandai Namco has announced that Astro Gaming will serve as the official audio partner of the Tekken World Tour 2019. In addition to providing headsets and audio equipment for events, the company will also be matching the World Tour's prize pool of $100,000, effectively doubling the possible prize money.
And in addition to this, they're also going to be doing an online qualifier for the next big tournament, which is CEO, I believe, where the winner of that online tournament is going to get $500 Astro sort of care package, and they're going to get a room and board out to CEO. Nice. So they're doing that as well.
Vodafone has announced a major partnership with ESL that will see them launching a 5G esports tournament. The Vodafone 5G ESL Mobile Open will feature the first finals played entirely on 5G internet. The finals will be held September 28th and 29th at the Milan Games Week. The event is featuring both PUBG Mobile and Asphalt 9 Legends with a $184,000 prize pool.
That's insane.
For a tournament that doesn't actually have a North American entrant, of all the countries that were invited, North American countries are not participating in this. It's must see. Yeah. It's 5G esports. Finally, yeah, we're going to get to see that. We have to tune in for this. It's going to be wild.
It's going to be interesting.
Sad news out of Kansas City, as 4 people were injured at an esports event. An under-21 event was being held at a local gaming establishment wherein a fight broke out that resulted in 3 people shot and 1 trampled as people fled the scene. One of the victims was listed in critical condition, the others with non-life-threatening injuries.
Oh, man, that is terrible to hear about.
That's all for the Checkpoint XP Esports Gaming Update. For more, head on over to our website, checkpointxp.com.
Thanks, Sarah, for the update. The landscape of professional esports is about to see a dramatic shift, as Nate Nanzer has confirmed he's leaving Blizzard Games. Robbie Norris, I need to get your take on this.
Look, when I first read this, I have to say I was surprised. You know, middle of the season, OWL at the height, you know, going into the next season, we're looking at home games as well.
It's one of those stories that you read and you start looking for other sources because you're like, no, someone botched
sure,
this one.
Sure,
this isn't
sure.
Right.
But, I mean, after having some time to sit and think on it, I don't think that this is really going to shift the needle that much at the Overwatch League. I think that Epic, though, on the other hand, I think they won out big.
Well,
because
right that's the other side of this story, is that where Nate Nanzer has announced that he's going is over to Epic Games to help with their Fortnite esports
and
team.
Psyonix, which they have
and,
as well.
And Psyonix as well. And I do think you're right. Listen, I think that OWL has been, you know, the foundation there has been laid very clearly.
Yeah, the framework is set.
Yeah, I don't know that, you know, Nate Nanzer, you know, he's a great commissioner, don't get me wrong.
He also helped to spearhead the whole, like, setting up of it.
And that's the biggest point, is that Nate Nanzer is a guy who clearly is well-versed in starting the backbone and the infrastructure of your league.
Exactly.
And in the same way that, you know, different commissioners of professional sports bring different sort of skill sets. You had Larry O'Brien, who kind of made the modern NBA what it is.
Sure.
But David Stern took it to the next level and created the superstar, you know, helped facilitate creation of the superstars and Magic and Bird and all them. That happened under David Stern's watch in the NBA. So whoever comes next in the sort of Overwatch ecosystem as commissioner needs to be somebody that can take Overwatch, not necessarily expand it, but hone in and focus on who can take and create those superstars.
Listen, Nanzer had been in the position long enough where he was able, I think, to probably, you know, pretty clearly lay out a 5-year plan.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And if they can keep to that 5-year plan, keep the expansion on track and keep it where it's going, I think that they're going to be in a good position. But Epic, on the other hand, has had one of the most disastrous esports first years that we've seen, even far worse than PUBG had. And PUBG was, if nothing else, just a little bit gun shy.
We were immensely critical of, I mean, not necessarily of Fortnite, whether how we feel about it, you know, aside, we were very critical of their esports scene because it didn't seem like they were taking it seriously. It seemed like it was an afterthought. But in the last month now, we've seen them acquire Psyonix, who have a great esports scene around Rocket League, and we've now seen them acquire Nate Nanzer. You can at no point levy the criticism that they're not taking their esports scene seriously.
Very true.
They very clearly are taking it very seriously now.
All right, well, listen, we got to leave the discussion right there, but we want to hear from you. What do you think of Nate Nanzer leaving as the commissioner of the Overwatch League? How big of a boon do you think that this is going to be to Epic? Connect with us on social media. Let us know what you think. That's Checkpoint XP on Facebook and Twitter, and Checkpoint underscore XP on Instagram. Coming up next on Checkpoint XP Daily, we'll check in on the weekend's action in the National PUBG League, what went down at Combo Breaker 2019, and Collegiate League of Legends Championship. We'll also preview the summer split of the LCS. That's coming up next on Checkpoint XP Daily.
This is Checkpoint XP. Check out the latest esports and gaming news and opinions at CheckpointXP.com.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
This is Checkpoint XP, esports and gaming radio. CheckpointXP.com.
Hey, welcome back to Checkpoint XP Daily, your home for esports and gaming. I want to thank everyone listening on 104.3 in Carthage, 103.9 in Marshall, and 100.7 in Henderson, as well as 1250 and 94.5 ESPN San Antonio. Check out our website over at CheckpointXP.com, and while you're there, make sure you sign up for the Checkpoint XP Nation newsletter. Get behind-the-scenes insight, photos, and access to contests and unique content. All it takes is an email address and a zip code. So sign up today at CheckpointXP.com. It was a busy weekend in esports. We had action in the National PUBG League and the fighting game community. This weekend also played host to the finals of the League of Legends College Championships. But let's start things off with the FGC and Combo Breaker 2019.
Yeah, and again, Combo Breaker is always a great, great, great tournament and event. But this one was even more special because it was one of the first times we saw a major from Mortal Kombat 11. This was the kickoff to the season, and it did not disappoint.
I got to tell you, the things I keep hearing about Mortal Kombat 11, we were traveling over the weekend, I heard a big group talking about Mortal Kombat 11, and I'm like, wow, when's the last time I was out in public and just heard like Mortal Kombat being talked about? That's a cool
feeling.
That's
pretty cool.
Yeah, it really is, you know, the best version of the game to come out in many, many years, so much so that, again, it was held just outside Chicago. Both Ed Boon and John Tobias are Chicago natives, so that's considered the home of MK. Ed Boon was in attendance for
Grand
Finals.
Nice. That's
it was
cool.
Really cool. The crowd game, you know, a huge pop for that.
I keep hearing it's the best one since Trilogy.
It is.
With this being its first major, what's like the character uses and like tier usage looking
you're
like?
You're seeing a lot of Aaron Black. Aaron Black is considered very top tier, a lot of Garrus. But speaking of some character picks, we have one of our favorite Sonic Fox.
Nice.
Also considered one of the best of all time at any NetherRealm game. He had to run through the loser's bracket, but he ended up against Samij, ended up picking a Pocket Scarlet, which is a character I think that was the first time we saw her ever in the whole
really?
Tournament. Did a reverse sweep on him, as a matter of fact, got to Grand Finals.
Wow.
And unfortunately lost Grand Finals to Scar, so Sonic Fox still has not won an MK tournament at Combo Breaker.
You'll get him one day, Fox.
Yep. With that said, also, we had the start of the Tekken World Tour. Its major schedule started with Combo Breaker, and again, the Koreans are just as strong
really
as they've ever been. They're really good at Tekken.
They're still good at Tekken.
Yeah, but American burst onto the scene by the name of Anakin, who forced the legend Nee from Korea into full sets, full rounds. If you want to see high energy, great casting, great Tekken play, that Grand Finals was one of the best I've seen.
I just need Anakin to change his name right now.
I can't have that.
That's not okay.
I actually tuned in like right at the very, very end of this, and to see it end with Anakin's opponent just kind of like backing away and just timing out. Like, how often does that happen in Tekken?
Well,
I feel like it doesn't happen a whole lot in the FGC as a whole.
That was Nee, and yeah, you see it a lot in Tekken. You see it in some games, not so much Street Fighter and others. But lastly, we saw a Street Fighter V, and the man has had the greatest 2019. Punk ends up winning Combo Breaker 2019 in Street Fighter V, beating out Evo Champion Problem X, who picked Abigail instead of Bison. But also we saw Goichi continue his dominance in Dragon Ball FighterZ as well.
Nice, and congratulations to all the winners out at Combo Breaker 2019. Moving on to the NPL. Last weekend was the NPL Royale.
Oh, it's such a better name.
It came back $80,000 on the line. All 32 teams between the NPL and the NPL contenders were competing. Obviously, those are broken up. 16 teams, you know, evenly dispersed between NPL and NPLC. Two pools played on Saturday, and by the way, just in case you were wondering, each kill is worth a point. First place is 10, second place is 6, it goes all the way down to 7th and 8th place, which gets 1 point, and the rest don't get any points. So for Group A, the NPL contenders showed up to play as the Happy Campers opened it up with an 11-kill chicken dinner. Very impressive.
Campers?
Cloud9 taking the second map with 7 kills. Third map was a bit more chaotic. Had a lot of action. Zenith came out on top with only 5 kills. The fourth map went to Endemic, who took down Susquehanna Sonics and were able to put up 8 kills for that. From Group A, the Sonics, Cloud9, Happy Campers, E-United, Tempo Storm, Simplicity, Lazarus, and Endemic all moved on to the finals. Then we got over to Group B, where Wildcard takes the first map, which was kind of a disappointing first map. Wildcard used the mountains on Erangel to let Space Station Gaming die to the blue. Envy taking the second map with an 8-kill win. Space Station Gaming getting on the board, a chance to redeem their hard loss earlier. They put together a round with 13 kills, highest kill game yet, and the chicken dinner on top of that. And then Wildcard taking the fourth map. Space Station Gaming, Ghost, Wildcard, Envy, the Rumblers, Halo Klein, Yellow Pike, and Accelerate all move on to the finals. And then in the finals, Simplicity takes the first map with only 4 kills. Envy let Cloud9 die to the blue on map 2 to secure their 10-kill victory. Endemic took the third map with only 7 kills. Happy Campers take the fourth map, allowing the NPLC to get on the board on the finals. At least they took 7 kills for that map. Cloud9 decided to put on a hell of a show and tied Space Station Gaming's record with 13 kills, netting them the win on that map. And the final match went to Wildcard Gaming, who were able to put up 10 kills. When all is said and done, Envy walked away the winners with 65 total points. Cloud9 followed them up with 52 points, and Ghost Gaming coming in third with 42 total points.
Look at those kills for some of those matches. 10 kills, 10 kills,
look
11 kills, 13 kills.
See,
it's
man.
13 kills.
And I think the biggest takeaway from this whole thing is, where was Tempo Storm?
Yep.
Tempo Storm, who's been running away with
the team, man.
I know. And they've been running away with it in normal matches and in normal season play, and then they don't show up when it's international or it's time for the Royale. It's really weird. You're listening to Checkpoint XP Esports and Gaming Radio. Want to thank everyone listening live at our Twitch channel over at twitch.tv/CheckpointXP. We're currently running through the list of competitions that were going down over the holiday weekend. Joe, we got to send it on over to you to hear about the Collegiate League of Legends Championship.
Yep, 8 teams qualified for the event, 2 from the Big Ten, the University of Illinois, and Michigan State University.
Yeah!
Right.
Columbia, from our home state, Michigan.
That's right. Columbia University and Maryville University out of the northern bracket, Western Ontario and University of Waterloo out of the eastern bracket, and NC State out of the south with UC Irvine coming from the west.
Friends of the show, UC Irvine.
Friends of the show, UC Irvine.
That's two friends of the show with Michigan State and UC Irvine both competing.
That's correct. In the end, Maryville University looked great throughout the event. They only lost a single game the entire tournament to Illinois in the semifinals. They swept Western Ontario in the finals 3-0. Michigan State University went down to Western Ontario earlier on in the tournament. This is actually Maryville University's second collegiate championship, as they also won in 2017. It was a great event. There was a lot of eyes on the event, but I couldn't help but feel like a lot of the eyes were also looking towards next year, when Riot's going to be officially running Collegiate League of Legends. it's going to look a lot different next year. I can't help but feel
and
like
it's going to look, I think it's going to look a lot more organized, and it's and it's exciting to, you know, possibly have some of these teams in line to be a part of that as
well.
Oh
yeah, absolutely. So moving on, we have to talk about the LCS summer split, because that's getting ready to start here over the weekend. So much to like break this down. We got to talk about what's changed. First of all, 100 Thieves has reworked their roster following a disastrous spring split. The addition of Amazing at jungle should be a definite upgrade, but there's a lot of questions surrounding their new mid laner, Soligo. Afromu played awful in the spring. I think the biggest question for 100 Thieves is Afromu going to bounce back, or has Afromu, are his best days behind him as as League of Legends goes? Because that's kind of where it's at for for 100 Thieves. I know. Some other questions to ask is, can Team Liquid stay dominant? I mean, they have been, they've won every split so far since franchising became a thing, but they looked at their shakiest at the end of the 2019 spring split. They looked hyper dominant in 2018.
Yeah.
At the end of 2019, TSM had them down 2-0 in the finals before they completed the reverse sweep to come back and earn their spot at MSI. Obviously, they went to the finals of MSI and shocked the world, so you would think they would come back performing strong, but there's kind of this thing that happens when you go back to, when you come off the world stage and you go back to playing in your region, and your region isn't maybe the most competitive in the world. Norris, I don't know your thoughts on that. Are they kind of at risk of maybe being a little full of themselves and coming back and maybe getting smashed by TSM?
You know what? I don't think so. I think they're going to be coming back laser focused because they're a team that wants to make a play in Worlds.
Because of that 3-0 loss in the finals?
Yeah, and seeing how they performed at MSI and saying, you know what, really we ran into G2, but everybody else we seemed like we could play competitively at least. I think that's really important for them, and it will hearken them into the new split.
But let's talk for a second about the juggernauts that used to be TSM.
Yeah.
As in, this year, they have seriously met some serious competition that have stonewalled them.
Yeah, I mean, for a team that started off, they struggled at the beginning of the split. The second half of the split, they were far and away the best team in North America, all the way up to the finals where they end up losing in the reverse sweep to Team Liquid. When analysts look at TSM, basically what the conclusion you come to is, mechanically, they're probably the best team in North America. It's all down to their communication, how well they're going to function, how good is Acadian going to be this split. We know their top laner is going to be great.
Can Broken Blade keep it up?
Will Broken Blade continue to be good? That's kind of the question around him. And then you got Cloud9, who kind of gets lost in the shuffle after all this discussion, because Cloud9, they feel like they have a roster that's good enough to win now. And the last couple splits, I mean, obviously they had a good showing at Worlds. The last couple splits, though, they were okay. We'll see if Cloud9 is going to be good enough to make waves. I'm going to be watching Golden Guardians, because I'm really curious to find
Golden Grams, man.
I need to know if that playoff
was that
a fluke?
Yeah.
I want to see, are they going to come onto the scene and be good, or are we going to be like, all right, well, that was fun while it lasted.
All right, well, listen, we got to leave the discussion right there. But listen, we want to hear from you. Connect with us on social media. Checkpoint XP on Facebook and Twitter, and Checkpoint_XP on Instagram. That's going to do it for Checkpoint XP Daily, the first internationally syndicated show on esports and gaming for radio. Visit our website, checkpointxp.com, for insight on esports and gaming, as well as our growing collection of podcasts and interviews. Make sure you tune in tomorrow, and we'll ask our social media followers what announcement they're hoping to hear at E3 this year. And join us Monday through Friday at 5 p.m. Eastern, live at twitch.tv/checkpointxp. Our theme is provided by the band Weird At Last. Find more at weirdatlast.com. Checkpoint XP Daily is a production of Beasley Esports XP. I want to thank my crew, lead segment producing by Joe Sloan, producing and booking help from Christine Solis. Big thanks to Sarah Skopik over at the Checkpoint News Desk, and of course my co-hosts who pull double duty as producers for Checkpoint XP, Robbie Landis, Norris Howard, and Joe Sloan. My name's Abe Bender. Keep listening.
You've been listening to Checkpoint XP, a complete look at all things esports and gaming. Check out the latest esports and gaming news and opinions at checkpointxp.com.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.